From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Labor Day edition, we are all, at least most of us, are going to have to labor a lot more and take home a lot less if President Biden and his allies in Congress succeed in their massive $3.5 trillion budget resolution. With most of America focused on the debacle in Afghanistan, this massive tax increase is almost going unnoticed. Now, who's going to bear the burden of this enormous spending bill, and what impact will this have on an economy that's trying to shake off the effects of COVID? Texas Congressman Kevin Brady, ranking member on the House Ways and Means Committee, is here with some answers in just a moment. And here's a news flash. Trust in the media is plummeting among conservatives, but confidence in the media is pretty much holding steady for those on the left. That, according to Pew Research. We'll get more from MRC's Dan Gaynor a little later here on Washington Watch. Also, a report out of Israel showing natural immunity is 13 times stronger than the vaccine in combating the Delta variant of COVID. So why is the federal government refusing to acknowledge natural immunity? Instead, they're pushing for vaccination for everyone. We'll talk about it with Dr. Marty McCary. And finally, we've talked a lot about the debacle surrounding America's withdrawal from Afghanistan. The effects of this, as we've said, are going to be long-lasting, especially when we look at some of our global adversaries like China. Now, what role did China play in Afghanistan, and what is their end game? We'll talk about it with Asian expert and author Gordon Chang on this edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you, download the Stand Firm app. That way you can stay connected with Washington Watch. But more importantly, the Stand Firm app gives you action items, alerts you when you need to engage with your government, whether it be at the state level, local government, or at the national level. Again, download the Stand Firm app. Let me thank those of you who have already responded to FRC's relief effort in my home state of Louisiana and Mississippi, partnering with Samaritan's Purse and the churches that are hosting them. You know, this weekend, a lot of folks trying to pick the pieces back up, clean out their homes, and of course, volunteers now beginning to come into the state. And I encourage you, join with ministries like Samaritan's Purse, helping out your neighbors. Also, if you'd like to make a financial contribution, FRC's put forth a $25,000 matching a pledge, and so we're going to match everything that you, our listeners, give up to $25,000. And again, that's going to go to Samaritan's Purse and the churches that are hosting them. You can do that at frc.org/relief. All right, a new report by Americans for Tax Reform found that President Biden's first proposed budget, budget resolution, it calls for $3.5 trillion. Is going to be the largest tax increase since 1968. But of course, you look at where the economy is and how it's struggling to get going again. What could be the long-term effects of these tax hikes? And then, of course, who's going to pay for them? Joining me now to talk about this, Kevin Brady. He represents the 8th Congressional District of Texas. He is the ranking member the House Ways and Means Committee. Congressman Brady, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about this because you're a numbers guy. You track this. You were key to President Trump's tax cuts that got the economy going at historic records, setting historic records. Now, I'm afraid if this administration succeeds, we're going to see history made, but not in a positive sense.
Yeah, certainly not. And first, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank you and Family Research Council for your help on creating some of the most pro-family tax reforms and provisions that we've seen as a country in a long time. But right now, you're right. All that is at risk. And I think following the humiliating surrender to the Taliban in Afghanistan, I worry this president is leading us on an economic surrender to countries like China, Japan, Europe, and the Middle East. He's proposing some of the highest tax rates in the world that will drive ultimately drive U.S. jobs overseas, research, manufacturing headquarters over into foreign countries. But worse than that, I think that the biggest impact is going to be felt on Main Street America, because these tax hikes, just record level of them, they just hammer our small businesses, our middle class workers, our family owned farms and businesses, as well as they set a goal, I think, to destroy every blue collar oil and gas job in America. So these are crippling tax hikes. We estimate if they go through that they could kill or put at risk up to 4 million American jobs. And they are moving quickly, Tony, as we discussed. The House is looking in committee to begin voting on these tax hikes this week.
All right, let's talk about this, Kevin, because the president has said he's only going to tax the rich. There's no way. When you look at, you just talked about it, jobs are going to be going overseas, jobs that came back to this country. That's not the rich that are going to pay the price tag here. That's the working man and woman who has a job providing for their family. Those are the ones that are going to be impacted by this.
They are, no question. Look, as you know, corporations don't pay taxes. They collect them. And who gets hurt are their workers, their customers, families who their retirement depends on that business success. And of course, the communities where those American jobs are at all get hurt. So President Biden is breaking his pledge on taxes, and don't take my word for it. The left-leaning Tax Policy Center and the nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation both say that taxes will increase on middle-class families starting next year because of the Biden tax plans. And their point is that two-thirds of middle-class families will see a tax hike starting next year. It'll go up to over 90%. And so clearly, it's working families, small businesses, family-owned farms who get hurt, no question, the worst with these crippling tax hikes.
So, Kevin, it'd be safe to say this claim that this will only affect the rich is kind of like, if you like your doctor, you can keep it, or we won't leave anyone left in Afghanistan. They're hollow promises.
They are. And I think people are starting to understand that. You're right. There's been so much going on. It's been hard to follow these tax hikes or this spending binge, all of which, by the way, is going to drive up prices even higher on families and local businesses, because, you know, you can't pour another $3.5 to $5 trillion in this economy without higher seeing inflation. And because many of these spending programs no longer require Americans to work to get these government checks, I think it's going to be even harder to reconnect the jobless to work when the government's paying them more to stay home than to reconnect. So there are, I think, a lot of things that change, frankly, the culture of America, along with our economy, our jobs, in rising paychecks. All that goes out the window under these Biden tax hikes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask a question that I think many of our listeners have been asking, and they continue to ask. I mean, basic economics. You're spending money you don't have to pay people basically not to work. We have an economy that's struggling to get back on its feet because of the shutdowns, because of COVID. This doesn't add up. I mean, this $3.5 trillion budget resolution that they're pushing through, which they're going to try to do without any Republican support, that's on top of the regular budget. Where's the money going to come from? What's this going to do to the economy?
Yeah, it is on top of trillions left of COVID spending, Tony, as well, adding more fuel to inflation. So none of this makes economic sense at all, either from a job perspective or the national debt. The truth is, you know, this country can't keep spending like we're in an emergency, and we cannot do it and cannot afford to do that. There's no question this doesn't weaken the economy just in the short term. I think it makes it far harder to avoid inflation or a national debt crisis in the future. Another reason we're fighting so hard, tooth and nail, against it. But we can't stop it by ourselves as conservatives or Republicans in the House. We only need four Democrats, four of those so-called moderate Democrats who run back home that way, to step forward. And the big question really is, are there any moderate Democrats left who will stand up against Nancy Pelosi and fight for their local jobs instead?
I mean, we've not seen much of a willingness of the Democrats to take on the speaker. I mean, what we have is a nation that is very clearly divided on economic policy, on social policy, and foreign policy. I mean, there's a clear line down the middle. And it appears to me, Kevin, that the election determines what type of policy we're going to be governed by. It's either we're going to be governed by a constitutional conservative policy, or we're going to be governed by a leftist agenda. There doesn't seem to be anything in the middle.
You know, there should be, you would think, but certainly in this year under this president, I've been there a while and am retiring, but this is the most partisan White House I've ever seen. And I think, you know, you and I would both look at Speaker Pelosi and understand she knows she's losing the majority in less than a year and a half. I think she's trying to ram through as much of this socialist agenda as possible. The Senate is eager to do that as well. That's why we have to fight so hard and so effectively here over the next year and a half to stop as much of this damage as we can. And obviously the economic damage, but more importantly, we're all trying to work to get people out of poverty and give them real lives. We lifted 6 million people out of poverty in less than 2 years under President Trump's tax cuts. I think this and the spending are going to create a new era of dependency on government that will be very damaging to the country for the long term.
Final question for you, Congressman Kevin Brady. When you look at the budget resolution that they're pushing through, $3.5 trillion price tag, these tax increases, can they be stopped, and how will we stop them?
So it can. It is uphill right now. But again, we only need, these are raised within margins. We only need 4 moderate Democrats to stand up for their local jobs in the House, 1 in the Senate. I believe while it'll be difficult to stop it in the Ways and Means Committee because it's loaded with liberal members, I think there's a better chance as this bill heads to the floor. We're going to keep that pressure up, certainly in the House. We don't need much, frankly, for people to fight for American workers. But it is. I think we can do this. It'll be a challenge at every step.
All right. Well, we know you'll be leading the charge, and we're with you. Congressman Kevin Brady, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us on this Labor Day edition of Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Take care.
All right. Congressman Kevin Brady of Texas has been fighting the conservative battle on Capitol Hill for a number of years. All right. On the other side of this break, do Americans and conservatives in particular still think the media is a trusted institution? Well, I think you know the answer, but we're going to delve deeper into it on the other side of this break with Dan Gaynor from Media Research Center. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
That all scripture is divinely inspired and given by God. It is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, and those who hear the word of God and keep it are blessed. If we are to keep the word, that is, obey it and be changed by it, then we have to hear it or encounter it, meaning we have to be reading and hearing it. God's word is necessary in our life, so much so that Christ said we are to live on every word that comes from the mouth of God. It is our daily spiritual bread. That is why Family Research Council offers the Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan. We want to read the Bible daily, and we'd love for you to join us so we can stay grounded in God's truth, navigate our culture from a biblical worldview, and grow closer to God. Our hope is that this plan will help you be transformed by God's Word by reading and hearing it daily. Sign up to get the daily passages and questions today by visiting frc.org/Bible. We are living in a time of biblical illiteracy, meaning most of our friends and neighbors, including those who attend church, don't think about the day's moral and cultural issues through a biblical lens because they do not know what the Bible teaches. We are seeing the terrible effects of this on our culture as our society has rebelled against the truth of God's Word. That is why Family Research Council has launched the Center for Biblical Worldview. This exciting new ministry was created to help Christians adopt a biblical worldview, to understand why Scripture must be authoritative, and to give believers the tools to advance and defend their faith in the workplace, in their communities, and in the public square. Through FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview, you'll get research and resources to help prepare you to give a biblical answer to our culture's most pressing questions. Access the Center's free resources at frc.org/worldview. That's frc.org/worldview.
To hear a Christian perspective on the news of the day, every day, listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. You'll get honest and thorough analysis of the latest news in our nation's capital and the most important stories around the world. Join Family Research Council President Tony Perkins live every weekday by tuning into Washington Watch on the American Family Radio Network, Bot Radio, the KTLW Radio Network, and independent Christian radio stations across the country. Or listen to the show when it works best for you by visiting TonyPerkins.com. We have a variety of experts joining our program, including Sam Brownback, Mike Pompeo, Senator Marsha Blackburn, Pastor Jack Hibbs, Sissy Graham Lynch, Albert Mohler, and more. Hear leading political figures, pastors, policy, and culture experts unpack the most important issues facing America. Get a Christian perspective in the news of the day. Check out Washington Watch with Tony Perkins at TonyPerkins.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Labor Day edition of Washington Watch. All right, when it comes to trust in American institutions, trust in our military, law enforcement, and religious institutions, they typically rank high. While trust in institutions like newspapers and TV media typically rank toward the bottom end of trusted American institutions. Now, this trend is certainly most pronounced among conservatives, where a recent Pew poll showed a cratered trust in the news media. I mean, dropping 50% since the 2020 election. Now, this really should not come as a surprise. It doesn't surprise me at all. When you look at the hostility that the media has toward conservative values. Now, I want to play a clip for you. I've played this before on the program, but it really, I think, just shows exactly what we're talking about. This is from CNN. This was from January 4th of this year. This is CNN's Chris Cuomo. He's mocking Marco Rubio's faith. Listen to this.
The man he called Little Marco, Bible boy. You know, he's got a Bible quote for every moment. He just never speaks truth to power or acts on any of it in the interests of his own state or of this country.
So is there any reason anyone should be surprised that conservatives have very little confidence in the legacy media? Joining me now to talk more about this, Dan Gaynor, Media Research Center's Vice President of Free Speech America, Business and Culture. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. And this is right up our alley. We've spent almost 35 years fighting the bias in the media. And, you know, particularly since social media came on the stage, it's gotten worse.
Well, you mentioned social media. Their trust level has also declined. Like it could get any lower. I think only 4% of American adults say they have a lot of confidence in social media. So they were already in the tank. But this is pretty significant when you look at conservatives. Now, let me, nearly 8 in 10 Democrats and Democrat-leaning independents at 78% say they have a lot or some trust in the information that comes from national news sources. That's 43% higher than Republicans, who have very little trust in the media. Dan, let me ask you this question. Is that because the media speaks the left's language?
Yeah, and the media always has. And maybe it's the reverse, though. Maybe the left speaks the media's language. I mean, they're the ones who set the narrative. They're the ones who talk about, oh, we can't say this word anymore. We got to say this word. We got to start. A typical news story about, let's say, transgenderism actually, identifies calling people who, even little kids by their new name, even if they haven't formally changed their name. Okay, little Tommy is no little Thomasina now. And they'll do that. So they always set the narrative to the left. And then we're left dealing with it. Since obviously Supreme Court was just taking action on, or not taking action on, abortion, that's another one of the areas where you can have organizations that call themselves pro-life, but they're not allowed to be called that in news stories. They're right. Called, anti-abortion rights. Well, that's right. That's just setting up the narrative always on the left.
And that's not from left-wing advocacy groups. That's from the AP. That is from these legacy news sources. Back to this poll, the survey rather, from Pew. I'm quoting from their summary. In just 5 years, the percentage of Republicans with at least some trust in national news organizations has been cut in half, dropping from 70% in 2016 to 35% this year. This poll was taken in June. At some point, I mean, the support for the legacy media is bottoming out. What's going to happen? I mean, we're going to have a divided nation, or is this what we already have? Some listening to legacy media and the others finding new sources elsewhere.
Well, I mean, you're right. This is what we already have. And what I'm amazed by is that 35% have some trust in the news media. They spent 4 years destroying any sort of sense of trust that we should have. They lied about Trump in every which way to Sunday. They came up with the phony Russian collusion narrative. They're, of course, later proven wrong. They've been lying since January 6th, saying that it was some sort of crazy insurrection. That's the word they like to use, when in fact it was a riot. Then they tell us that these riots that we had nationwide, they were mostly peaceful. Tell that to people who lost the $1 to $2 billion worth of damage to their homes and businesses. And for people who don't understand this, that's just in a 2-week time period. And those riots went on for months. But do you notice they didn't bother to update that number, because it wasn't conservatives rioting, it was liberals. So we don't really want to know the truth.
So, Dan Gannon, let me ask you this question. The legacy media for the last 40 years has been trying to publish the obituary of evangelical conservatives involved in the political process. I mean, with every election cycle, they're dying, they're going away. Unfortunately for them, we're still here. How do we write the obituary of legacy media? I mean, when they're only talking to half of America, how can we just put them out of their misery?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, we do it by doing their job, the job they refuse to do for them. And by the job they refuse to do, they refuse to cover the conservative movement. They refuse to cover evangelical Christians in any positive way. The only time we crop up is if we're getting slammed. So that means conservatives and Christians need to have the basic journalism skills. We need to write those stories, cover those stories, so we know what's going on, even if they don't. And that means stories of charity, stories of what the good works churches are doing. The only time the media cover those at all is if there's a controversy, or if those churches somehow are doing something the left wants. Traditional church, suddenly embraces a transgender pastor or something like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, you guys do a great job in exposing it. CNSnews.com does a great job of presenting that news from that perspective, from a truthful perspective. And we're always glad to have you on the program. Dan Gannon, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right. And folks, so go to those sources you can trust for news. All right, coming up next, a study out of Israel showing that natural immunity is better than... Stick around if you want the answer. Don't go away. More Washington Watch after this.
All of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. Leah Sheribu, a Christian teenager in Nigeria, remains a captive of Boko Haram for her refusal to renounce her Christian faith. Chinese pastor Wang Yi is serving a 9-year sentence for speaking publicly against the Chinese government. In Pakistan, Asif Pervez is on death row for allegedly sending a blasphemous text message. All of this because people in power decided different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone, because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, let me just say this at the outset so that YouTube doesn't take this clip off, or social media doesn't clamp down on us at the behest of the Biden administration. I'm not against vaccines. I've said this on the program many, many times. But what I am for is people making their own decisions. I am against government mandates. And I'm concerned that we're not getting the full picture, all of the information. And here's why. There's a new study out of Israel that shows that natural immunity is 13 times stronger than the vaccine in combating the Delta variant of COVID. All right. So we're getting these breakthrough cases of people who have actually had the vaccine, but then they get the virus. But then there's people who've had the virus and they have a greater level of protection against it. But the federal government is not even talking about that. There's not even a discussion about natural immunity. Why? Well, joining me now to talk about this is Dr. Marty McCary. He is at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He's a physician and a professor, and we've had him on many times, and I'm glad to welcome him back. Dr. McCary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, let's jump right into it. This study out of Israel that shows that natural immunity has a stronger level of protection than the vaccine in some cases. Is this a legitimate study?
It's an incredible study. It had over 700,000 people, really sound scientific methodology, and it shows just what you said in your introduction. I agree with everything. It is not only 13 times better than vaccinated immunity, but natural immunity, when you adjust for the differences in the populations that were studied, as much as 27 times more protective. And most importantly, no one died who had natural immunity. Now, also, no one died who had vaccinated immunity. So we got to be honest with the public. Breakthrough infections are not our battle. It is protection against death and disability. And if we listened to these results instead of dismissing them, we could focus our efforts with intense laser focus on non-immune adults, those who have not been vaccinated and those who have not, don't have natural immunity. Those are the folks we really want to get vaccinated, and they should go get vaccinated quickly as Delta spreads. But when they disregard these studies, they're hurting the credibility with the public, and they're hurting our vaccination efforts.
So if we focus, like you said, on those that, number one, are at risk, those who are not those who have not have no immunity, would we not get, if we focused on that, would we not get to that level of herd immunity that we're trying to reach faster?
So Delta changed the equation a little bit on herd immunity, because we used to think there was a number and you'd see really significant slowing. And we got there in May of this year. But Delta changed the game. It's so contagious that everybody will either get vaccinated or get the virus, get infected. So we want folks to get vaccinated if they've not had the virus already.
So why does the CDC not recognize natural immunity when we're talking about, you know, now some the government requiring employees and others to have the vaccine, but making no allowances for those who have actually had the virus and have natural immunity?
It's so frustrating to see this. You know, I think there's a lot of doctors that are looking at this and saying this is one of the greatest failures of public health in history. Forcing people who are already immune to get immunized. It makes no sense. It's illogical. They've been dismissing it early on. Some say pharma has been part of the narrative. I personally think we've just got a very small few people making all the decisions medically, and they're just old school people who are just have a different opinion. And they dug into that position when it became a political position to immunize everybody. And so when people see we got to vaccinate every American, I don't agree with it, but at the same time, the nuance is we want those without natural immunity, without having had the infection, to get vaccinated if they haven't already.
See, I've said all along that if you really wanted people to get the vaccine, you should tell them they can't have it. Then they would want to get it.
If we were honest with people, we would have much better vaccine uptake, but we have not been honest as a medical establishment.
And when the government gets involved in these issues, it raises the level of suspicion and distrust, especially in the environment in which we currently find ourselves. So I think I just think if they could reset and go back, and I think one of the first steps would be to recognize natural immunity and also acknowledge that these vaccines are not 100% foolproof.
Yeah, can you imagine if our public health leader said, look, we got this one wrong. We just came in with the wrong hypothesis. Natural immunity is incredibly effective. Don't go out there and just get the virus to get it, but get vaccinated if you don't have immunity already from previous COVID infection. That would do wonders. A little honesty would go a long way.
I think you are absolutely right. Dr. Marty McCarry, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Good to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
All right. Look, again, I'm going to restate it. I'm not against vaccines. In fact, I think some people who are in high-risk categories, they should consider this, prayerfully consider it. But I am totally 100% against this idea that the government should mandate this for every single person and strong-arming them to get. And I'm grateful for medical doctors like Dr. McCarry who are willing to speak honestly about this. Okay, folks, stick with us because there's more Washington Watch to come. Don't go away.
With the growing hostility we're seeing in our culture towards God's truth and Christians, it is imperative that Christians pray, stand for truth, and seek after the Lord. At Family Research Council and FRC Action, we want to come alongside you in this important call, which is why FRC and FRC Action President Tony Perkins hosts the Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast. This program was created to encourage brothers and sisters in Christ to focus their attention on the Lord first and in every aspect of their lives, and to seek after the Lord in the midst of a confusing time in our culture. Join Tony as he speaks with experts, elected leaders, and Christian leaders for this weekly half-hour program to discern how to engage the culture and understand current events through a biblical lens. Join us in committing to pray for our nation, to stand for truth, and to seek the Lord first. To watch the Pray Vote Stand weekly broadcasts, visit PrayVoteStand.org.
Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent towards justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. We invite you to join us at our Stand Courageous Men's Conferences to discuss critical aspects of masculinity. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day and will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and mentors so that we can have the generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Learn more and find a Stand Courageous event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Calling all university students. Are you looking to grow as a Christian leader and to equip yourself to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture? Join us at Family Research Council for our 12 to 15 week internship program. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, you will grow in personal and professional development. You will have the chance to work in a variety of departments with positions in policy, communications, event planning, and more. Gain experience by working directly with our experts who will guide you in pursuing careers of influence so you can make a difference wherever God calls you. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in the heart of downtown DC, giving you the chance to experience our nation's capital. Take the next step in your professional journey. Visit frc.org/internships to apply.
Welcome back to this Labor Day edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Also, if you'd like to help with the hurricane relief, you can go to frc.org/relief. $25,000 has been put forward by the Family Research Council, which we will match what is given by our listeners that will go to Samaritan's Purse and the churches that are hosting them in response to the hurricane. All right. China, as we've been talking about, has long maintained ties with the Taliban. And after the group's takeover, their foreign ministry, that's China's foreign ministry spokesman, said China would have friendly and cooperative relations with the Taliban.
The Afghan Taliban have repeatedly expressed their hope to develop good relations with China, that they look forward to China's participation in the reconstruction and development of Afghanistan and will never allow any forces to use Afghan territory to endanger China. China respects the right of the Afghan people to independently determine their own destiny and is willing to continue to develop friendly and cooperative neighbor relations with Afghanistan and play a constructive role in the peace and reconstruction of Afghanistan.
The Taliban similarly has been vocal in courting China's involvement in Afghanistan's future, saying in recent interviews that China is a, quote, great neighbor and could, quote, play an important role in the reconstruction of Afghanistan, end quote. But the relationship between the Communist Party of China and the Taliban goes way beyond borrowing a cup of sugar. With me now to talk about what China has been supplying the Taliban is Chinese expert Gordon Chang. He's the author of The Coming Collapse of China and the Great U.S.-China Tech War. He can be found on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. Gordon, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Tony.
And by the way, I should mention, what started in Louisiana, Hurricane Ida, has made its way all the way to New Jersey. Your internet was knocked out, and so you're in the local library there at the Clarence Dillon Library in Bedminster, New Jersey. So thank you for going to the effort to be able to join us.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, we don't have power, but we'll get power. And by the way, Tony, we'll take back our country, too.
Yes. The American people are resilient when we put our mind to it. And I do think a lot of people are waking up with what we have watched unfold in Afghanistan, and it's like an onion. When you pull back these layers, there's certainly tears involved, but if we respond appropriately, we can make some corrective actions, take some corrective actions. And I want to focus on this relationship between the Taliban and China. This is not new, although it's maybe just newly being discussed. China has played a long role in the Taliban and even equipping them with instruments of war.
Yes, this goes back more than two decades. So before 9/11, China was supplying telecom equipment to the Taliban. They did that in the wake of that horrific event. But also during the insurgency, China was selling small arms, including anti-aircraft missiles, to the Taliban, and they were used against American and NATO forces. So China was on the side of basically committing an act of war against the United States because those arms were used to kill Americans.
It's not like this was a secret. This was known, but many American leaders of both political parties have kind of ignored this fact.
Yes, they have. What they tried to do was to entice China to better behavior. But in doing that, we've had a series of presidents who just looked the other way at what China's been doing. And this has convinced the Chinese, and this is just goes beyond Afghanistan, that Beijing can kill Americans and get away with it. And they've been doing this with regard to COVID-19, which they deliberately spread beyond their borders, and with China's backing of these fentanyl gangs. And that's tens of thousands of American deaths each year. We Americans got to understand the maliciousness of the Chinese system and start taking appropriate actions.
So we know that they've had, as you just mentioned, they had a kind of a long history there in Afghanistan, equipping the Taliban with small arms, rockets, missiles. What role did they play during this debacle that we call a withdrawal from Afghanistan? What was China doing behind the scenes?
Yeah, we don't know that yet, but a number of people have expressed suspicions. And part of it is, remember that the senior Taliban leaders went to the Chinese city of Tianjin for that meeting on July 28th. And we don't know exactly what was discussed, but American leaders should start asking the question, where did the Taliban get the money to prosecute the end of the war? For instance, we know that Afghan soldiers were paid by the Taliban towards the end of the war because they hadn't been paid by their own government. So the Taliban came in with hard currency and cash. And I suspect that part of that money came either directly or indirectly from China. But these are questions that we need to ask, Tony, because we have not been asking these difficult questions for more than two decades.
Now, I'll be very candid. We don't know for certain, because there have been statements made that much of the military material that was left behind by the United States, some put a price tag of $82-85 billion. Many said that, or some reports have said that it was demilitarized, it was destroyed. Are you concerned that there may be some stuff left behind that will then be passed on to the Chinese where they can reverse engineer or gain information that they did not have previously about our military capabilities?
Well, certainly, because there have been estimates that 20% of that material has now been sent over to China. And this would be consistent with what we know in the region. So, for instance, after the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound, we lost a sophisticated helicopter. And that helicopter, the parts, what was left of it, was sent by Islamabad to Beijing for analysis. And although, you know, people may say, well, of course the Chinese know what a Humvee looks like, but also they've got some other equipment, and they were able to see just how well this stuff performs. So this is important for Beijing to learn, and we left that behind. And we should never have allowed for that to happen, even if it were partially disabled. And by the way, Tony, we've seen these pictures of American equipment rolling with Taliban drivers and Taliban fighters in the back. So we didn't do a very good job of making sure that this stuff couldn't be used again.
Yeah, it's quite frankly unbelievable, if you ask me, that we left the country with all of this. And maybe some of it was inoperable, but certainly, as you've pointed out, we've seen the pictures. Some of that stuff was rolling. Let's talk, Gordon Chang, about the incentive for China to enter into this relationship, and it appears that they're playing the long game because they've been at this for a while. What is the motivation of China to align itself with Afghanistan and the Taliban?
There are a number of things. First of all, Afghanistan is one of China's 14 land borders, so they want to make sure that that one is secure. They don't want Afghanistan to be used as a refuge for Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and others who have been brutally persecuted in China. They want Afghanistan's minerals. You know, we had President Biden 2 weeks ago issue that executive order that set a target of half of all American vehicles by 2030 should be electric powered. Well, that requires lithium. It requires rare earth minerals. Afghanistan has more lithium than any other country in the world. So clearly China wants that. They also have that lease to that big copper mine, which they haven't been able to exploit, but they certainly would like to get the operations going there. And one other thing that people don't normally talk about, and that is China would like Afghanistan to be part of its land bridge to the Arabian Sea. China wants to avoid the Malacca Straits, which is a choke point. And so if they were able to tame the country, they would be able to build roads and connect to Iran and get to the Arabian Sea. So that's important for them as well.
So, Gordon, what you've just laid out, certainly the concern here from the United States from an economic standpoint, China has a lot to gain from access to the rare minerals that are there in Afghanistan. But from a military defense perspective, should the United States be concerned about that?
Well, we certainly should, because we know that before 9/11, the Taliban allowed Afghanistan to be used as a base for al-Qaeda for attacking the United States. And the Taliban is going to do that again. We hear people in the Biden administration say, oh, the Taliban's going to be different this time because they want the legitimacy from the international community. Well, the Taliban wants legitimacy, but they not from the international community. They want legitimacy with other terrorists. And of course, there are many of them in Afghanistan. And the Taliban's got to be worried that they will lose fighters to, for instance, ISIS Khorasan, ISIS-K. So we can be sure that there is going to be Afghanistan as a haven for terrorists once more, and that we will once again have to deal with this because we are going to be attacked. One thing that this has done, the rapid collapse of the Afghan government has energized terrorists around the world, including terrorists in Pakistan. And this means that the United States is going to bear the brunt of a new wave of terrorism.
Gordon Chang, let me ask you this question. Beyond Afghanistan, I mean, as we this debacle, this display of weakness, however you want to describe it, it can't be good. I totally disagree with the president saying that this was a exceptional success. It was a failure. I had the Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, on the program last week talking about this. When you look at the dominoes that fall, when you display weakness on the international stage, talking about China, where does this put Taiwan?
This puts Taiwan at risk. And the reason I think is because, first of all, we know what Beijing propaganda was saying. You know, even while Kabul was falling, they talked about how the United States would never defend Taiwan. And Beijing propaganda said that when the Chinese invaded, and they used when, the U.S. would bug out. So clearly, we have seen since then, in those last couple weeks, China step up military provocations in areas adjacent to Taiwan. And that's more pressuring of the island republic. There's another place, though, that is also of critical importance to the U.S. And this is a really horrible story for us. And that is India. India was moving much closer to the U.S., into America's camp, working with us in what's called the Quad, which are the four countries, Japan, Australia, India, and the U.S. Well, now America's friends in New Delhi have been disheartened by what they saw in Afghanistan, and there is no more move in the part of India to work closely with the United States, which means that India is going to cozy up with Russia and may even make an accommodation with China. Remember, China has troops deep into Indian-controlled territory in Ladakh, and there's also the encroachments in Sikkim, which are part of India. So we could lose one of the most important countries in the world, especially as we go forward. India will be the world's most populous nation, if it isn't already. India is powerful. It has a lot of friends and a lot of influence in that region. And for us, this is a loss that'll take us decades to recover.
So Gordon, is it safe to say that the Taliban may not be the biggest winner in the U.S. and its withdrawal from Afghanistan, but it's actually China that is the big winner?
I would think that China is the big winner because it has been able to use this from a propaganda point of view to tar the image of the U.S. And we Americans never pay very much attention about propaganda. But for China, this is really important. And what China's been able to do is to send out really two messages. One of them is what we just talked about, to Taiwan and to others, saying the U.S. is not a reliable ally. And the second is a message to Americans that America is completely incapable and is not able to stand up to China. This is part of China's intimidation campaign, because we've seen these intimidation themes, especially over the last year. And China was able to magnify them in the wake of the fall of Kabul. And when you look at the complete failure of the U.S. military, the U.S. intelligence community, and the national security apparatus centered on the White House, China is making a powerful case.
I would think that that would go beyond even countries like India that we're developing those relationships with. I would have to think that this is going to impact our relationship with some of our historic allies. If there is another 9/11 type incident and we've got to rally global support, a coalition to go after terrorism, some of these countries may think twice before they follow American leadership.
Yes. Well, we know about the problems in Western Europe. I mean, in the British Parliament, this is a special relationship. Our closest ally, decade in and decade out, had this rant session basically in the wake of the fall of Kabul, talking about the U.S. as an unreliable ally and the complete failure in Washington. And that is a warning for us because, you know, President Biden has said so many times, you know, we need to work in conjunction with our allies and all the rest of it. And now our allies are looking at us and saying, you know, who are these Americans? So this undercuts the president's own strategy in a way which is fundamental.
Yes. And that music we're about to hear is a warning to us that we're out of time. Gordon Chang, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Tony.
All right. Gordon Chang, you can follow him at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us. Share Washington Watch with your friends. It is a trusted news source, unlike legacy media. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.